Children of Indigenous Australians as well as New Zealander Maori background born overseas can be denied citizenship, as the current laws don't account for tribal connections. Recently, the issue came to light in New Zealand when a newly naturalized citizen's children were classed as illegal as they were born in the United States. The father is born in Australia and has Maori descent on his mother's side. So should a new citizenship category be considered for Indigenous children born overseas? To find out the answer to this question and more, The Wire's Tony Pankaluik spoke with lecturer in Indigenous Studies at the University of Melbourne, Dr. Sarah K. Coulter, to find out more.
Now, I guess this came about because we have the citizenship laws that we utilise at the moment. Currently in New Zealand, it was from around 1977, and then we had the Australian Citizenship Act around 2007. And these acts are not necessarily reflective of some of the growth and development that we're doing in regards to Indigenous relationships, Indigenous knowledges, and how they might impact how we behave in 2025. And so currently, we don't have any recognition of Indigenous values or ideas in either of these acts. So a lot of my work over the last few years has sought to understand in greater detail what we can do in regard to potential children born out of their homeland. Right now, take for example, if we look at the New Zealand context, a child that was born here in Australia, kind of encouraged through some of our other agreements like the Trans-Tasman Travel Arrangement. So a child born overseas may begin to be having their children overseas. So two generations have passed. If that family in any way want to come back to New Zealand, like have another child, that citizenship doesn't currently allow them to do that. So they would be considered an illegal overseas. Despite having connection or Indigenous relationship to land, space, water. And the same goes in Australia. There are kind of a time limit on how long you can connect into that place. And obviously citizenship includes a lot of bureaucratic and layers to try and access and understand how to even obtain citizenship if those two generations have passed.
And so you mentioned the Trans-Tasman Agreement, which I know was started in 1973, but also... We're talking off air as well, the Australian Aotearoa New Zealand Indigenous Collaboration Agreement. What exactly is it and what function does it serve in relation to the topic we are chatting about?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting area to be exploring in a contemporary context, because obviously we have these laws for citizenship developed pre the Australia Aotearoa Indigenous Collaboration Agreement. But what's really curious about this agreement is that it is between Australia and New Zealand, and it is just primarily focus on our Indigenous peoples and the unique relationship that we have with each other and with our Indigenous and First Nations communities. And so some things in the agreement, like it talks around how this is a space that we can talk about Indigenous-led government-enabled opportunities for collaboration. It talks about agencies so that we will recognise, or the government do recognise, that unique agency. So under this particular agreement, as I have been working and thinking about what are its functions, because at this point in time, although we've been seeing the Australian and New Zealand leaders meet and talk about it as important and special and significant, the actual outcome, I guess this is where we're sitting today. What could they be, or how could we think about trade, or how could we think about Indigenous mobility in greater detail?
Now, this new citizenship category, you mentioned in your article about it's complementing, not replacing existing laws. So how would the whole process operate? Like, would it mean creating a brand new certificate get granted to people? If you could explore more of like the implementation process going forward, what you would like to see?
So what I would like to see is that there is an increased flexibility in movement and the recognition between our two nations that we can actually move with more freedom and work together more freely. In terms of the actual implementation, like I said, definitely think that there doesn't need to be, I guess people get afraid that it's going to change the existing structures, but again, this is where, like you just mentioned, I think it's really important to recognise that this could be a complementary pathway that is worked through with both government and their representatives and Indigenous people themselves. Because I think at this point in the kind of proceedings, although there are letters to both governments about this, it hasn't been responded to as yet. And what that looks like and what that could be, I believe it could be a real opportunity to come together as a kind of a place-based citizenship category. Because although I have my my own personal ideas as to what this might look like. I would love to understand, you know, for First Nations Australians living in New Zealand, for example, what would they like to see as well, and really work through those collaboratively and bring everybody into that conversation.
Is there any other talking points that I haven't covered throughout our chat you would like to mention just as we wrap up?
Yeah, I think what's really important, and I may not have talked about it in greater detail, but I believe that, you know, tribes and mob and First Nations and Maori have different understandings of connection to place. And I think we shouldn't avoid that conversation in our laws. Our laws must move with the thought and the thinking of the time. And I guess we have a very unique relationship, kind of encouraged through the Trans-Tasman, you know, that what we have there. And I just believe that we must be willing to engage in these ideas today.
That was lecturer in Indigenous Studies from the University of Melbourne, Dr. Sarah K. Coulter. Ending the report by The Wire's Tony Pankaluik.